6'6" above sea level. I grab my mic because I like to take you to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. Good afternoon. I'm your host today for Public Affair, Brenda Conkle, and we're here on February 23rd, 2013. I'm subbing today, and we are going to be talking about a summit that's coming up on Saturday. The summit is called Housing is a Human Right. Now, what do we do about it? And we are here in the studio with Anthony Prince, who is the chair of the National Lawyers Guild in Madison here, and also a labor attorney. Karen Andrew, who is the director of Outreach Ministries at First United Methodist Church. And Heidi Wegleitner, who's on the Dane County Board of Supervisors and an attorney at Legal Action Wisconsin. And the three of them have been doing a lot of the heavy lifting to make this summit happen, and they're here to talk about the summit and why they're doing it and why it's important for you. So I want to thank you all for coming in today.
Thanks for having me, Brenda.
Thank you, Brenda.
Thank you, Brenda.
All right, so I'm going to start off with Heidi, and just housing is a human right. That sometimes that sounds funny to people, and they're like, is it a human right, or is it not a human right, and why is that important? And I think one of the things I wanted to just ask you is, why is it a human right, and where does that come from? And then a little bit about why it's significant here in Madison and Dane County.
Well, that's a good question, and I think you ask different people, you'll probably get different answers. But we have recognized it as a human right here in the city of Madison and Dane County with two resolutions, and there are also international agreements and guidance that state that housing is a human right, and certainly the Universal Declaration of Human Rights that the United States was instrumental in drafting and signing on to in, I believe, 1948 or 1949, recognizes the right to housing. So this is a big deal that we passed these resolutions. And when we did in the city of Madison, the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty, which does a lot of international and national advocacy for housing as a human right, you know, recognize that we passed these resolutions and highlighted it as one of the best, if not the best, in the country. So I'm really proud of that work, and it came from the ground up. It came from people directly impacted, Operation Welcome Home, Take Back the Land Madison, folks who are homeless or have experienced homelessness and wanted to redefine how we think about housing into a human rights framework, because it is so very fundamental to so many other rights that we enjoy by being human. So at this stage, we're getting together to talk about implementing that right, because the resolutions, the city and county resolutions are a little different. The county one contains some pretty specific targets and benchmarks for implementing the right, and both resolutions call for a plan to get us there, a plan to make sure that housing is something that's realized for Dane County, City of Madison residents. So this summit hopefully will help create some of that momentum to get that implementation going.
And was this controversial when it passed the city and county?
It passed the county unanimously, I believe, and the city with very little fanfare. In fact, I didn't even realize, I think it was on the agenda when it passed. I found out after, and I was like, oh my gosh, well, that's good.
And it's been a while. Has anything happened, realistically, has anything happened at either the city or county level?
Well, some of the goals related to, you know, reducing the number of homeless kids and creating more single room occupancy units. I mean, we are making progress in some of these areas that are set forth in the plan, but we need to get to actually developing the plan. So we're still working on some of these issues, but I think the overarching driver, which would be this housing plan and an annual report, really does need to get going.
Sure. And thank you for sort of like telling us how we kind of got here. And the whole purpose of the summit is to talk about, okay, now how do we help implement those plans? And I'm just wondering, Anthony, why don't you just tell us a little bit, why did you get involved in this? What sort of drew you to this topic besides Heidi asked you to come to a meeting?
Oh, okay. Well, geez, that was enough for me when Heidi said right. Come to the meeting.
Exactly.
The Lawyers Guild, of course, has long stood for the primacy of human rights over property rights. And so when we are actually approached by a number of people most recently about the idea of supporting actions that were designed to help alleviate the issue of homelessness and address the immediacy of providing shelter during the winter, during this last winter. And in the course of those discussions, what emerged from those discussions was the idea of trying to gather together all of the activists, or as many as we could gather together, from diverse communities, from diverse sets of interests, on this issue of actually implementing these outstanding, really historic resolutions that were passed here in Madison and Dane County. And that's where the idea of convening a community summit on the issue of housing as a human right evolved. Now, my own involvement really around this issue is longstanding. I actually, when I was young, we lived in public housing, and as a teenager, I was very active around housing issues in the projects. And over the years, my family, we were Section 8 certificate holders, and so we kind of faced some of the issues that those who have the Section 8 certificates face. You know, there is no, it's not really a protected class, and the landlord has the right to say no to someone who has a Section 8 certificate. So we kind of felt some of that discrimination, certificate-based discrimination ourselves during the lean times in Chicago. And then, I've been a part of efforts to unify labor and housing activism for many years. We were active down there in Cabrini Green in Chicago when, they were taking over the abandoned and boarded up units there in the Chicago Housing Authority projects. So this is an issue that has affected my family, and of course on the broader issue of the National Lawyers Guild. This is exactly what we're talking about when we talk about a new paradigm, a new entitlement, a basic human right, a basic human necessity. So we're happy to be part of this effort.
Excellent. And Karen, kind of what brought you to the table, or what, I know you do a lot of on-the-ground work with a lot of folks that are directly impacted, and maybe you could tell the audience a little bit about that.
Yes, and thank you, Brenda, Heidi, and Anthony. It's wonderful to partner with advocates in our community, such as the folks here at the table and the bigger table in our community. First United Methodist Church is downtown for good. We're downtown for good because we didn't leave in the past when we were faced with making a decision that had to do with usage of a parking ramp due to homeless folks hanging around that ramp. And at that time, we made a big stand. The church made a stand to say, you know what, we're going to make a decision that we will pay for in many different ways, whether somebody agrees with us or not within the church or nearby with our neighbors. We're downtown for good. A big part of our ministry is outreach. Homeless ministries is a large part of that. Our door is open to all. We are a reconciling ministry, so that we will also stand that ground to say that whether you may have a person may happen to be gay, bisexual, transsexual, whatnot, our doors are open. Now, what brings me here personally is I experienced, we could say, homelessness at the age of 17 when I made a decision to leave home for my own personal reasons. And I found the struggle being in high school at the age of 17 and trying to go to social services and being told I'm too old to help and it's only one more year. I personally know what it feels like to be at a young age, going through adolescence at a very difficult time as a young woman without shelter. Luckily, I was able to stay with somebody who opened up their doors for me personally. For me, this is a personal, heartfelt mission, as well as a ministry, part of our church in putting our faith into action and partnering with people like Brenda and Heidi and Anthony, Tammy Miller, Carrie Riddle, many people who aren't here right now who do so much and will be involved in this summit. I'm here to support the frontline people on behalf of the church and personally.
You know, I asked about those stories partially because it's hard to find somebody who this issue doesn't touch right now. And I think right now we're facing sort of an unusual crisis here in Madison. We got a 2% vacancy rate in the rental market, and it's incredibly difficult for people to get into housing. Waiting lists are closed all over the place, and it's just making it incredibly difficult for people, even when you have a job, to be able to find housing. And And I think this is now a time for people really to come together around this issue. I wanted to just quick read off some of the sponsors because it is a broad base of sponsors that are coming together around this. It's the Dane County Homelessness Issues Committee, which is actually a county committee that is sponsoring it, which I think is unusual and kind of exciting. The Affordable Housing Action Alliance, Progressive Dane, the National Lawyers Guild, Madison, Youth Services of Southern Wisconsin, which is many people know as Briar Patch, and they do a lot of the youth outreach, such as what Karen was just talking about. Madison Area Urban Ministry, the First Unitarian Society, United Legal Workers, NOLSW, UAW 2320, Freedom Inc., Operation Welcome Home, Take Back the Land Madison, Tenant Resource Center, Occupy Madison, Autonomous Solidarity Organization, South Central Federation of Labor, Labor's International Union North America, Local 236, United Way of Dane County. I just, it makes me laugh when I see some of these names on the same list together. Community Action Coalition of South Central Wisconsin. So it is a broad coalition of people coming from all different directions that are really coming together because it is just a crisis that we're facing in our community. And so, I mean, I think that it could be a really great conference. And one of the first parts of the conference is a panel that Heidi's going to be working with. And Heidi, why don't you just tell us, like, what people will learn when they come in and hear that first panel? I mean, there's lots of stories and lots of different groups that are working on this. So
sure. So I think, you know, the idea is to welcome people to the movement. This really is a movement building, educational and organizing kind of conference. So I'll give a little bit of background, sort of like I just did, but a little bit more comprehensive on how we got here and what housing as a human right means. And then we're also going to feature little vignettes or personal statements from different community activists, people who have been touched by homelessness or unfair treatment of tenants, or have some other sort of personal stake in this fight, who were motivated to come to join this struggle. And then, well, Brenda, you'll be talking about sort of the bigger crisis, the nuts and bolts of why we're in this desperate situation as it is specific to Dane County especially. So it will be pretty much an overview, but also to grab people's attention and connect with some of the personal stories that brought people to this movement.
And there are lots of grassroots groups that are out there in the community that are really working on this issue. Stone Soup goes out and gives soup to people. When someone needs boots, Karen finds them for them. When you know, someone needs a meal, Tammy from Feeding the State Street Family. I mean, there's just a lot of different groups that have on their own sort of created these little venues to help people. But still, that's just sort of putting a Band-Aid over a bigger solution that's needed. And one of the unique things about this conference, I think, is that we're trying to not just bore you by listening to panel speakers. So you want to talk a little bit about how the day is going to go and maybe, you know, what people can expect, like with breakout sessions and such? I mean, we're trying to develop it so that it's more of an interactive.
Right. Well, I think, you know, the format of the summit is we've tried to design it as much as possible to be really, really accessible to every single participant. We wanted to kind of get away from the kind of standard format where it's a passive process in many cases, a group of panelists and an audience listening. And we wanted to make it much more of a two-way, or I should say many-way kind of dialogue. And so the opening plenary, of course, Heidi's going to give the background, as she indicated. We'll have the vignettes. We're going to have then a session on the issue of shelters. I mean, there are some real issues out there. On the one hand, we have some dedicated and I think very, commendable efforts to provide shelter to people who need shelter. On the other hand, there are always issues within the shelter system, and we want to have a constructive dialogue about that. Then, of course, we're going to move to the broader issue of how is it that housing is not available? What can be done to create affordable housing so that we can get people, in a situation where they won't have to be faced day in and day out with the challenges of not having a roof over their heads and over the heads of their family members. And finally, we're going to have the last panel. We'll kind of address the housing struggle within the broader context of how the issue of housing and homelessness is touched by and touches public health, education. Well, for example, we've got people coming in who are active in providing educational resources to homeless high school students. we found that out there in Middleton, of all places, that they've identified 97 homeless high school students. And it's an invisible group. I mean, that's the 97 number, tip of the iceberg. There's far more students that are homeless, and for one reason or another, they're hidden in those shadows. They'll be participating as well. And so we want to wrap it up then with how the different segments of the struggle interconnect, and then kind of where do we go from here.
Excellent. This Housing is a Human Rights Summit. It's about homelessness, it's about housing, it's about tenant-landlord relationships, it's about building affordable housing, and it is, as Anthony just explained, it's about how does that all fit into the rest of what's going on in the community. Because really, if you don't have housing, you don't have a whole lot, and it makes it very difficult to be able to get a job and to do all the other things that you need to do. Heidi, you want to talk a little bit about the breakout sessions? And
I just think we have some amazing, really interesting issues lined up for breakouts, and I just thought if it's okay, I'd talk about a couple of them. So for the shelter breakouts, for instance, we have Make Room for Youth coming, who also signed on as an endorser, and they'll be showing their movie, which if you haven't seen it already, is just incredibly moving. And they'll be leading a discussion after that. We're going to hear more about efforts to establish a medical shelter, learn more about trauma-informed care, and of course this is all discussion, informal breakout roundtable discussions. We're going to learn about day resource programs from the experienced folks over at Bethel and Ronnie and you, Z, people who were really involved in the recent day shelter. Stone Soup, Santa's Without Chimneys, some of ASO's projects to bring food to people, to bring gifts to homeless people. We're going to hear about that. Also, I think this is interesting, the effects of shelter on pregnant women and young children. Jeannie Erickson from Project Babies will be talking about that, and it certainly overlaps with some of the public health issues that Anthony was just talking about. There will be a breakout on the needs of LGBT homeless populations, and Donald Haar and Angie Raylene from Outreach will be participating on that. And there's also one slated for the to discuss a homeless bill of rights, which we've seen other communities develop, and I think that would be a really interesting exercise. We've got a few set for the affordable housing session as well. Hope to have a table on Housing First, permanent supportive housing, SROs, cooperative housing, some of the other housing models out there, as well as challenging subsidized housing denials and terminations. How do you get in and how do you stay in? So I'm really excited about those breakouts. And we also want to make it clear that if folks have other things they want to talk about, we will have extra tables set up so you could potentially come with your own idea and your own breakout, and we want to foster that sort of informal discussion and get those new creative ideas going too.
It does look like we have a caller, so we'll go to that caller. And caller, why don't you tell me your first name and what's your comment or question?
My first name is Thomas.
Hey, Tom.
I wanted to make a comment. I think it was on, in fact, on National Public Radio, which is surprising, about San Diego. They built places for homeless people. I believe the city did it. Plus, they had something like lockers outside where the homeless people could store their stuff. They did have like you had the winter shelter there. They had something like that. Plus, they had an area where the people could tent. And even then, they said that's still not enough, and there were still people doing tenting, you know, like on the sidewalk and everything else, but they didn't seem to hassle them like they do in Madison and most cities. And it was because they had got a new mayor, and that was one of his first things. He had talked to the homeless people of what they needed and what they should have, and that's what they did. And so I just wanted to mention that and see what your guests had to say regarding that, if they knew anything about that, or if they will get some information to present at the concerts. And I'll hang up and listen to my your response.
Is
a nice show. Thanks.
All right. Hey, Tom. Anyone want to respond to that?
Well, that was new to me in terms of hearing about San Diego, but certainly I'll look into that. And thanks, Tom, for bringing that to our attention. I will say one of the key pieces of the housing plan is to recommend policies to prevent the criminalization of homelessness. And we've tried some of these efforts in the past year or two, you know, with Occupy Madison's activism and other work related to basically criminalization of basic needs, going to the bathroom, just having a place to sleep. There's no legal place to go, as is often said. So I think that's a really important part of this human rights struggle. And it's great when we have other communities that we can look to for models about this. One of the resolutions I introduced last summer was to provide additional access to showers, restrooms, and personal storage space. And it ended up becoming the temporary day shelter, and there was some lockers there, but now that is not available, and we won't have much for personal storage space until a permanent day resource center opens, hopefully later in the year. So there are some real basic needs that are not being met right now, and that's a big problem.
You know, if I could, I actually was in San Diego many years ago and recall being in Balboa Park, which is one of the big parks there, and where they had a really significant homeless population that was just barely surviving, you know, living in, you know, plastic tarps and crates. And it was just a real contrast between some of the opulence you see surrounding San Diego and some of these areas. It's a beautiful tourist area. It's a military, it's a Navy town. And to have this this situation in the parks was a real civic problem, is how they kind of addressed it. So on the one hand, I would commend any municipal authority that does something to provide some basic elemental avenues for human necessities, you know, of personal hygiene and showers and those types of things. On the other hand, I think that the city's commitment, I don't know anything about this new mayor, but I think the commitment we're looking for and why we're calling this summit is that we need to move beyond, as you said, Brenda, the Band-Aid, and move to some basic systemic solutions to this problem. You know, my view, it's really inexcusable to have homelessness and to have people who live in fear of losing their shelter, losing the four walls and a ceiling in the United States. It's just, there's no excuse for it. And I think what we're saying here, and I think the significance of the resolutions, and it has to be pointed out that you yourself, Brenda, and you know, Heidi in particular, have really been kind of at the front line of advocating for those resolutions. They are historic. They open the door for us to say, look, this is a basic human right, and government has an obligation to see to it, just as the right to vote, you know, just as some of the political rights that we take for granted. This is an economic human right that we're also going to have to fight for.
We do have another caller, so I'm going to go to that caller. Caller, what's your first name and what's your comment or question?
Okay, my name is Methuselah. I tuned in late, so I don't know if you gave any of the details of the logistics of this conference, how people can attend, when, where, and if there's any way that they could participate at this late date. My other question is, do you plan to address specifically certain issues such as, say, public housing, which is a topic that badly needs more public discussion? And also, do you intend to do anything as far as encouraging people to identify specific landlords that are particularly bad or abusive? Because that's another feature I think would be an excellent idea. I'll take my answers off the air, and thanks for an interesting concept.
All right, thank you. And my next question was about the logistics. I think we'll go to Karen for that one.
All right. Registration begins at 8:30 a.m. over at First United Methodist Church. We're downtown, one block off the square at 203 Wisconsin Avenue. We have parking, and parking is free within our parking lot. This summit is totally free. We'll have a light breakfast, coffee, juice, all morning. Registration is between 8:30 and 9 a.m. The first session starts at 9. That session is 9 to 10:30. And that next session would be 10:45 to 12:15. And this is still, again, at First United Methodist Church. We're going to be having a special lunch sponsored by the Stone Soup Advocates. Carrie Riddle is a big leader in that movement. That is from 12:15 to 12:50. So the morning sessions, including the food and hospitality, are over at First United Methodist. The afternoon sessions are over at Bethel Lutheran Church, which are just across the street and down the way a little bit from our church. And so the address over at Bethel Lutheran Church is, I'm going to go on memory, 214 Wisconsin Avenue or 214.
203.
I'm thinking of a different.
Oh, wait.
Sorry about that. Well, I'm 203. Yeah, First United Methodist.
312.
The other thing.
It's 312.
Well, we got that right now. 312. All right. And I wanted to say on the first part of the logistics and back what Heidi and Anthony and Brenda have said about breakout sessions. This is a community event. Yes, we have some things scheduled. We invite people to bring an issue that is of interest and that somebody has light to shed or would like to invite that light be shed on any one topic that touches homelessness. Please come with that in mind and knowing that it's welcome and appreciated. All it does is expand everything we're doing right now. And I think you wanted to add to that?
I think also afterwards we're going to go over to 122 State Street, and there will be, either we'll be showing the movie that Mark Kornblatt did that's called Street Pulse, or we will be having a speak out. We're still waiting to see once if we're going to get permission to do that screening, but over at 122 State Street there will also be more of an informal gathering where people can come over and join us there as well.
I'll just add that I am planning to do a breakout session on issues with public housing and how you would challenge a termination or a denial from subsidized housing regarding that and invite, you know, folks to come with their issues. Those policies are being revised right now, so it's a good time to tune into that. As far as dealing with bad landlords or creating a bad landlord list or something like that, we will have Colin Gillis from the Wisconsin Alliance for Tenants' Rights there, and he will be offering a statement as part of the first session. And I'm sure that there will be folks that have a similar interest. So I would invite the caller to come, and if you want to help facilitate a roundtable discussion regarding, you know, holding landlords accountable and some organizing tactics for doing that, I think that would be very welcome.
Yeah, I know Colin's always looking for extra people to join that mm-hmm. organization, so he would definitely welcome it. Anthony?
Well, I was just going to say, if I could maybe go back for a moment and touch on something that that Heidi raised, and that is the issue of the criminalization of the homeless. And I think that we need to see it, again, within a broader context of the criminalization of poverty itself and those who are impoverished. That, for example, you have now, I believe, half a dozen, if not more, states that mandate drug testing for persons who apply for forms of public assistance, and they want to expand that in some of these states to include people who apply for unemployment compensation, that you'll have to go in and submit either to a blood or urine test as a precondition for receiving a benefit. It's not really a benefit, but to receiving unemployment compensation or public, temporary assistance to needy families or some other program. Even federally funded programs, because they're administered by these states, have the authority, or they're exercising the authority to impose these punitive sanctions just based on a person's status as being poor and forced to rely upon these meager programs. You know, I think one of the things we looked at, and it's still the month of April, this month marked the 45th anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King, and we wanted to mark that. We did mark that on April 4th. Because Dr. King, in the last weeks and months of his life, was devoted to the proposition that poverty can and must be ended at once. I mean, his approach was not a safety net. He ridiculed the notion of a safety net. He said people don't need a safety net. They need to be able to survive. They need to be able to be provided with the basic necessities, and poverty can and should be eliminated. Otherwise, he said, it's not a civilized society. Now, 45 years later, we have 47 million people in poverty. So, you know, we think that this is part of a historically evolved struggle, and we're moving into this summit with that kind of vision and that kind of determination.
You know, a lot of people ask me, and I'm going to ask you guys, because I never know what to say to this. They ask me, well, this is a liberal progressive town. How can it be that, you know, they look at sort of my blog and what's going on with Occupy Madison and how they've been chased around. They can't go to city land. They can't go to county land. They can't pay for it to even be in the parks. They can't, you know, and it just, people just keep getting pushed around. And Heidi's Resolutions really had a hard time just trying to get porta potties. You know, they put one porta potty up on the seventh floor of a parking ramp and said, there, we put a porta potty out there. What's going on? Why is it so difficult for the city of Madison and Dane County to really take this issue on and try to do something that, as you said, is like the longer term, you know, systemic approaches to solving these issues? I'm wondering what's going on.
I'm going to jump in. This is Karen, and I just wanted to say, in just talking with homeless folks who might come in for a shower, we offer free private showers twice a week for homeless folks, and the accompanied needed personal essentials that any one of us would need to get clean: shampoo, soap,
a razor,
shaving cream. And let's talk about homeless folks who are working, because I connect with homeless folks who are working, and I don't know about you, but I need to take a shower before I go to work. And so outside of shelters, there are only two places I know of in Madison where homeless folks can shower. It would be over at First United Methodist downtown and the Catholic Multicultural Center. So we switched our hours so that here somewhere nearby we'd have showers Monday through Friday. Ours happen to be Tuesday, Thursdays. Theirs are Monday, Wednesday, Friday. We have two showers. They have one. Our showers go from 9 to noon. Theirs go from 9:30 a.m. to 2:30. So we might get about the same people through, even though their hours are longer. They just have the one shower. We over at First United Methodist Church, we're trying to help on both ends of things. The Band-Aid, because meanwhile, while people are unsheltered and homeless, people need a shower. People need food. So what we're trying to do is help a little bit, let's just say, with both. And then supporting people who are doing these good works that are really the justice movement. Mercy is one thing, but until we move from mercy to justice, nothing will change. So that's really an important facet, I think, on this movement.
Well, I have a few responses to that. I think, you know, there's certainly huge issues related to funding. And if you look at, you know, why we have this massive housing shortage, certainly, you know, I can say that we all share the blame, local, state, federal, community. But from the federal government standpoint, I mean, I also grew up the first handful of years of my life in Section 8 housing. And that's when it allowed my parents to finish college, save money to buy a home. And it provided that ladder to the middle class, so to speak, that economic mobility that we hear so much about. But that's when we are funding it at about almost three times the rate we are now. I mean, it's a trickle. And you can't even apply to get on Section 8 in this area. And much of the public housing waiting lists are closed as well. So that there's a big funding issue there. And with locally, of course, we have limitations now with what Governor Walker has done to limit our ability to raise revenue and property taxes to cover funding important programs. So I think that's one thing. I think there's also an issue of invisibility. I think, you know, the people that read your blog aren't everyone, unfortunately. Right. but you have, I mean, people that maybe I went to college with or other people, they don't regularly interact with folks who are really, really struggling. And so there is this level of, you know, we still need to educate. We still need to get that message out that there are people in our community that are really falling through the cracks here. And they're all different kinds of people with all different kinds of backgrounds. And they're people that deserve a better life. And I think there's also fear, stigma, and stereotypes that get exploited and that prevent some good positive solutions. Because not every solution requires funding. Some of the policy changes related to camping and some of these things don't require money, but they require us to overcome fear and stigma of people and get out of our isolation and understand the human rights crisis in our midst.
So we do have another caller, so I want to get to that caller. But I do, you know, if you're interested in these issues, please join us this Saturday, the 27th. Registration starts at 8:30. Programming starts at 9. It's over at the First United Methodist Church at 203 Wisconsin Avenue. And there's no pre-registration. There's no, you know, just show up. You're welcome to come, and there's no cost. And there will even be light refreshments and a lunch. So please join us if you're interested, and bring your own ideas, as Karen mentioned earlier. Or you can also call in with your questions here too. And we do have another caller. So caller, what's your first name and what's your comment or question?
Well, I wonder if you'd consider that the construction industry speculators are a huge cause for homelessness, because clear across this country for decades now, they have been tearing down perfectly usable smallish housing. The neighborhood I was raised up in was demolished for blocks and blocks and blocks. It was called Coney Island. And they replaced it with projects. And the same thing happened in Madison. They tore down blocks and blocks and blocks. In fact, I was living in what is called the Bush in Madison when it was tore down. And one of the saddest things they did, they knocked down a couple of brick two flats, which were about 10 years old. So every time they tear down a functional neighborhood, it's guaranteed they will create some homelessness. Thank you for the program, because it's not an insoluble problem, but it is probably insoluble so long as we remain strictly capitalist. Thanks for the info.
Thank you. Anthony?
Well, you know, just a couple of responses to the caller's remarks is that, you know, I think that we have to understand, I think the evidence is very clear that homelessness is not something that just happens. It's not a disease. It's not something that's not a plague. I mean, it arises as a natural consequence of the dynamics of the economic system. And there's no doubt that if you look behind the scenes at destruction of neighborhoods, the destruction of viable housing, what amounts in some cases to a civil or even criminal conspiracy, excuse me, between various arms of a local government, developers, even the wrecking companies. I know in Chicago, I'm part of a small group of attorneys. We call ourselves the Chicago Anti-Poverty Law Collective, and we are taking on Chicago Housing Authority, the City of Chicago, and Chicago Police Department, because we found that there is a rather unholy alliance between these forces. Excuse me. In collaboration with some of the developers and some of the wrecking companies to kind of target certain neighborhoods so they can raise those neighborhoods and put up the kind of, expensive housing or shopping centers or luxury apartments or hotels, you know. And so I think it's important to see that there is a bad guy. You know, there are bad guys in this scenario. This is not just something that just happened. It's not a condition of the weather. You know, it's something that for which there are economic interests who have dug in. They've got their interests, and they're going to protect them. And whereas we've got our needs and our necessities, and we're going to fight for them.
When I think locally, if I can say something, they, where's all the money coming for the local races? That's coming from various groups that are looking at tearing down certain neighborhoods that are wanting to basically tear down perfectly viable housing that might need some repairs and build very expensive housing that people won't be able to afford. And I know there was just recently in front of the city council a project where they were doing that very same thing. And we have no ordinances in place that say you have to replace that affordable housing when you build something new. And we, you know, inclusionary zoning doesn't work for rental housing because it's there's a state constitutional prohibition. And so there's just lots of obstacles there are to creating a situation where people, if they are going to tear down that type of housing, that they build something new. And, you know, the Mifflin Street neighborhood is the next one to go. and we do have another caller. Caller, what's your first name and what's your comment or question?
Dennis.
Thank you, Dennis.
Well, I'll tell you what, three cans of worms, sir. I don't know where to begin. In 1976, I remember Ronald Reagan getting presidential coverage, getting off a jet on a private airport and being asked what he thought about the 200th anniversary of our nation. And he said, well, I think it's been 200 years of a most interesting experiment. Going back to George McGovern, in 1972, I was 16 when he lost to Nixon. And I worked in bowling alleys at the time. And, of course, you know, it's quite a place to have your finger on the pulse of the public. And the common comment was, well, what do you want, a crook or a fool? And, of course, McGovern's policies would have eliminated a whole lot of bureaucracy. He had a plan to have just a guaranteed minimum wage, similar to the earned income credit, that any family of four that was surviving on less than $12,000 a year at that point in time was economically disadvantaged, and he wasn't going to come up with a whole welfare system about it. He was just going to have, if you're a family of four and you file your income tax and you didn't make $12,000, the government's going to stabilize you, and, you know, they'll follow it and do all this, and what a different world that would have been. Yeah. But when I go to Madison now, I drive up, and just of the people, by the people, I guess we get what we deserve. Because, I mean, I know a couple places where I can get off the road and use a restroom. But you drive into downtown Madison, and you're not familiar with the place, just you know, I'm not even homeless. But go to find a public restroom. And with our government the way it is, that we haven't funded the basic bare necessities, like your caller person said earlier about places where people can publicly go take a shower safely. The opening of George Bush's library is this week, if you're unaware. Southern Methodist University in Dallas, a $500 million library. And they're giving away T-shirts and crokies to the first 500 visitors. If you don't know what a crokie is, it's an elastic to keep your sunglasses on. And I guess, obviously, we all need them because the future's so bright, we're going to have to wear shades. Thank you.
Thank you for calling. Anybody want to comment on that?
Well, I think he brings up a good point that what we're talking about when we're talking about public amenities that are accessible to everyone aren't just things that the homeless need, but make our community a more welcoming space. I mean, I'll give you just a small example, but we used to have benches in the municipal building, right outside the post office, outside the CDA, and it was just a place where you could take a load off, you could chat with a friend, you could sit down, and those were removed not too long after Mayor Sagan came into office, and I don't know, we never got the full story on why that happened, but now there's just this empty spot, and you got to go sit outside, or you got to go into the CDA or somewhere else to find a space to go. But I think, you know, a lot of the amenities we're talking about, a public bath, that could be enjoyed by everyone. People who want to, you know, get a shower before they go to a meeting downtown, like me, right? Yeah, exactly. So I think the commons really has been eroded in so many ways, and it disproportionately impacts people that don't have other options, don't have private homes to go to.
You know, I think that the caller kind of makes a point, and that is that it seems to me that when you raise up the bottom rung of the ladder, the whole ladder goes up. And when we fight and secure a victory for those who are at the so-called bottom rung of society, all of society benefits. I remember when the curb cuts came in for persons in wheelchairs, and you know, the curb cut, man, that was not only a boon to the people in wheelchairs and other assisted moving devices, but to the, you know, mothers and fathers with strollers and the kids, and the kids on the bicycles don't have to jump the curbs. I mean, it's a small example, but the fact of the matter is that we raise up those who are at the bottom. It's not a question of we're fighting over scarce resources. That's how they like to pose it. You know, and that's a term I'm sure Heidi's heard. I know I've, as attorneys, we always hear this expression, allocation of scarce resources, as a justification for, well, we only have so much to go around, so therefore we have to make these hard choices. But there's plenty to go around. Their resources are not scarce. They're being stolen from us. And part of the reason for having this summit is to say we're going to reclaim our entitlement, and we're going to go forward with what has already been declared a human right.
And I would just go beyond the idea of amenities, but providing these spaces for us to connect to each other. I think that's what was so successful and amazing about the temporary day shelters, that you had this place that people, those lines of class and race and culture and everything were broken down, and people were just coming together to help one another and connect with one another. And it just showed the power of community and how much we could do with minimal resources when we you know, got outside the box and just came together to connect with people and meet their needs. And one of the most moving things from the Homeless Issues Committee listening session there was a comment by a grad student, a volunteer there, who she wasn't homeless, but she was so grateful for this opportunity to meet folks there and to help and to serve and just connect with people. And I think some of the neighbors as well and other community volunteers really felt that. So I really think these sorts of things can be seen as an asset and not just a giveaway or some type of thing to only benefit homeless people. They benefit us all, as Anthony just said.
I agree. You know, another tough question people often ask me, and I'm just going to ask some folks who deal with this, is why don't people just go to the shelter? And people ask me that question all the time, and I try to answer it and not get frustrated that they still don't know the answer to the question. But somebody else answer it besides me. Karen?
I'd like to share a few things about that. As I was mentioning earlier, we come into contact with homeless brothers and sisters all the time, whether they're coming in to take a private shower, or they're coming in to get a meal, to enjoy a meal. Or as Heidi mentioned, to connect. We do have an informal worship support time. People can come in twice a week, and we purposely don't label that the homeless support group, which is a great thing to have that, where people do feel this is dedicated to this space. But we're enjoying that type of space for community interaction. So we have some college students come, some members, some retired pastors, homeless folks, food pantry guests, whatnot, just to interact. And the awareness and the stereotypes seem to just melt away, and people will come and talk to me from both, let's just say, experiential spectrums, whether it be somebody who's never spoken with a homeless person, and realizing we're all people. We're all people. It doesn't matter if a person is homeless or a person's living in a wealthy area. We all have the same needs. And what the bottom line is, we need to look at this in a way that where it's a community-based connection. You know, the other thing about the shelter that you asked about was really the main question. We serve as an overflow for mm-hmm. one of the shelters. And speaking from just the accessibility factor, first of all, they're virtually always full. Secondly, for those who may not be aware, there's a certain time you have to check in. There's a certain time you need to get out of there. When you're checking in, if you happen to be going through the men's shelter, and I'm not, this isn't, it just is what it is. They have to run a program a certain way. And when you check in, you don't know where you're going to be sleeping that night, but you have 15 minutes to get to 1, 2, or 3. One being the main shelter at Grace Episcopal, or 2 or 3. We serve as number 3. And I've heard all sorts of feedback about the, geez, I was mugged on the way to the shelter. I have a job and I can't make it there. There are so many challenges with a single shelter system versus options, where we have choices, rather than one men's shelter and one maybe a few opportunities for, let's say, domestic abuse or Salvation Army or whatever the case may be. There aren't a lot of options, and especially for those, in my opinion, who are working and homeless, that if you know I can keep my clothing here that I'm going to need to wear, and if I'm working in cold storage, I'm going to need those boots. And if I got to get a bike, you know, I worked with a guy who helped a gentleman who's homeless who worked second shift at a cold storage facility. Well, he rode the bus to work, loaded up the bike we got, a generous person donated for him. Then he rode his bike back to the shelter. He got a special permission to get in. It's, from what I hear, it's just not as easy as people think.
And I mean, I think the biggest reason people don't go into shelters because there's annual limits. You're a single man or single woman, 60 days a year. So one out of 6 days, yay, you get to stay in the shelter. Most people use those in the winter. There are severe weather exceptions. But for a majority of the year, you just can't even access it because you're maxed out of your days. And there's, as of mid-March or late March, there were 150 men that would not be able to enter shelter again unless severe weather, which is less likely to happen in the summer, until November 1st. For families, it's 90 days per year, and I think there was a 180-day cumulative lifetime limit. The other reasons you wouldn't is because you could be kicked out. There are people who are permanently banned from men's shelter. We're trying to reverse that, so there is a reinstatement process. But right now, you could be kicked out for a short period of time to forever. And then what? You have no other options. And the other reason is that some people just choose not to stay in shelter because it's not in the men's area. For some reason, I have had more experience in the men's shelter than the women's shelter. But there's a huge number of bunks in one small area. It's in a basement. I mean, it's not a place where you have a lot of peace and quiet, where if you have any sort of anxiety or other mental health issues that could be triggered in that environment, that would be very difficult for you. And I think similarly with women and children's shelter. I know single women sometimes are, you know, have a tough time getting rest because there's kids and it can be loud and kind of stressful in that way too. So I think another reason some people just will never go into shelter because they've been in that environment and it doesn't work for them. And I think that's why Karen's point about choice is really important.
So we do have a lot to talk about on Saturday, and there is a planned follow-up as well. I just want a quick review. Saturday the 27th over at First United Methodist Church is where we'll be starting out in the morning. Registration's at 8:30. You can come, no pre-registration necessary. The programming will start at 9 o'clock. We will switch in the afternoon over to the Bethel Lutheran Church, which is sort of kitty corner from there, and then after that over to 122 State Street. So it's all kind of within about a block of each other of where we will be. There's several different panels that are going on. The first one is sort of a broad overview of a lot of the programs and groups that are working on various issues. Then we're going to go on to talk about the shelter system, which we were just talking about, affordable housing, and then wrapping up with how do we bring this all together? How do we bring in housing isn't just an island by itself, but there's really a lot of other issues that go on. Then it's all connected, and how do we bring it all back together? And there's lots of sponsors for this event. There'll be lots of written materials and information that will be handed out. And then there will be a follow-up. The follow-up is going to be on May 18th, right? And it'll be from noon to 4. And the location for that was also at Bethel Lutheran Church, correct?
Yep.
Okay. That's correct.
So we're sort of getting the information out there, making connections, letting people get connected, and then we'll do a follow-up, which is going to be more hands-on, what do we do next kind of thinking about how do we move from here. Any of the folks here want to give a last word about the summit, or why would you want people to go to the summit?
Well, I would say that what we've done here in Dane County and City of Madison in getting through an aspirational goal such as a formal declaration that housing is a human right is huge. It's tremendous. And but as it was with the Civil Rights Movement, it's one thing to declare, to make a judicial determination or legislative enactment. It's another thing to fight for its implementation. So I would say that we stand on the edge of a very significant development. We want to see to it that the goal of that development is, in fact, realized.
Excellent.
I'm just really excited to see some new faces. I mean, there is an incredible amount of work going on at the activist level, at the program level. There's just tons of people doing good work in this area, and now we have this great framework for transforming all that good work into some action and to bring all these folks together and hopefully see some new faces, new people that want to learn more and get involved. I'm just really looking forward to that, and this is the place to plug in if you're interested in this and want to get involved. There will be plenty of opportunities.
And lastly, if I can interject something, I would say also to hear the voice from a homeless person.
Absolutely.
So we can advocate and we can retell and share, but to hear firsthand, see, meet, and all of that is it's a real blessing.
Yes, and I do think that is one of the great things about this is that it's been sort of adversarial with some of the shelters in the past, and I think we've got those shelters coming to be on the panel to talk directly with people and to really have those types of interactions that have sort of been missing in this community. So I think it's a great opportunity. Again, that's this Saturday, First United Methodist Church. It's the Housing is a Human Rights Summit, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.